Due to technical problems, audio to this podcast cut out after 18 minutes. Topics discussed will be readdressed at a later time.
Good day, everyone, and greetings from the Freedom's Frontier in sunny Fort Huachuca, Arizona. I am Command Sergeant Major Jesse Townsend, the Commandant of the Military Intelligence Noncommissioned Officer Academy, and your host for today's MI Corps Noncommissioned Officer Podcast. I have the distinct pleasure of introducing three very esteemed noncommissioned officers to today's show. From the Office of the Deputy Chief of Staff, G2, the G2 Sergeant Major, Sergeant Major Julie Guerra. From the United States Army Intelligence and Security Command, INSCOM, Command Sergeant Major Will Reinhardt. And from the Office of the Chief of the MI Corps, also known as OCME, is Sergeant Major Megan Hobbs. Thank you all for coming together today to answer some questions that are on the minds of the NCO Corps. Today, questions are relevant to the subject areas of force structure, talent management and career progression, promotions, and professional military education. And with that, we're going to dive right into some questions. Sergeant Major Guerra, the first one is for you. Counterintelligence reform is a hot topic across the Army and across the MI Corps. Can you provide us an update on how the G2 visualized the transformation and how soon we will see a functional CI command?
So I think, thank you for that question, audience. I think what I'm going to do is kind of tag team this with Will Reinhardt from INSCOM, since his brigade, the 902nd MI Brigade, that has the CI mission for the Army, really has the lead on what CI reform looks like. But yes, there is a future for CI reform. And yes, there is still a plan in motion for us to have a CI command in FY22. And Will, I'll turn it over to you.
So if you look at, counterintelligence over the last probably 30 years, the way we were postured for the counter, the CT fight in the last 20 years was different in how we were postured prior to that. The previous 30 years, we probably did 3 arrests on following up counterintelligence investigations. In the last 2 years, which is how long we've been in this model of reform, we've made almost 17 arrests based on some of the things that we've changed and the pilots we've run. And what we realized in this process was we had to reform counterintelligence in our Army based on the future threat. We needed to be postured differently and looking at it differently, whether it was for modernization, whether it was for insider threats, et cetera. And so, the reform, we are absolutely going to continue reform. So is it still in motion? Absolutely. Are we going to, give up on this at some point? That is not going to happen. So CI reform is going to continue until we get to a point to where we find ourselves postured and positioned to better protect not only our future modernization, but also our force.
And so I'm just going to add on real quick. So one of the things that we realized, we know as a career counterintelligence agent, I will tell you that this has been a long time coming based on the structure that was in place. It was done post-Vietnam War, and we just kind of left that system in place. We left all of that in place. The force structure was left in place, and it was never really adapted for the future or current fight that we were in. And one of the things that showed us that while we were looking at CI reform inside the Department of the Army was during COVID, and we had counterintelligence agents that were supporting Operation Warp Speed and the FBI and all kinds of other things trying to get after the insurance that there was, protection of what we were trying to do to develop a vaccine.
Yeah, and I'll add, if you look at how we were postured based on, the previous 30 years and how we're postured now, our adversaries basically had free roam inside, our country and inside our networks and inside our education institutions, inside, they just had the way it was designed and built was great.
And access.
For when it was built. But it wasn't, it's not how we needed to move forward.
Right. And access to that point. They had access to the intellectual property. They had access to our installations, access to our institutions of learning. And it was a perfect breeding ground for collection. And that's kind of what put us in this place that we are now, that we have to look at how CI is done inside of our own homeland, and that we're doing it differently to protect our assets and what is important to us.
All right, great answers. All right, all you CI agents, know that you're going to be busy, very much so, even more as reform goes forward in the upcoming years. So don't think that there's a job out there you're going to get to go take a knee at. Next question, Sergeant Major Reinhardt, I'm going to ask you to take the lead on this one. From an INSCOM's perspective, are there any plans, initiatives, or discussions going on to better balance MI billets across FORSCOM and INSCOM to help prevent stagnation and encourage development of our Intel NCOs? And meaning, reduce FORSCOM footprints a little bit, or have more billets addressing our strategic missions and global, as it relates to global competition, as opposed to working JPass and security in many of the FORSCOM units and some part-time security checks.
Okay, so thanks for that mouthful, but let me be clear right off the bat. INSCOM's not going to manage FORSCOM structure. That's not what we do. INSCOM will optimize and transform our own structure to meet, you know, an MDO capable intelligence and security command. There's no, you know, INSCOM's not looking to reach into the FORSCOM CG's formation and take people and reduce that, not at all. And I'll go back to the CI reform question. We are not looking at FORSCOM CI agents and how do we, you know, take from, that's not what we're doing. We're absolutely not going to do that. This is all about, you know, when you're talking about balancing billet structure, you know, and I could toss it over to Sergeant Major Hobbs, that is something that OCME looks across the entire MI Corps, and they look at those grade plates and they look at that structure and where it sits, and that's their job. That's not my job. I'm not doing that. That is not what I'm doing. But I am optimizing, you know, my formation and my TDAs to ensure that we are postured and set for the future fight of 2035. So.
Yeah, no, agree, Sergeant Major. You know, as OCME, we do look at those grade plates to make sure that, you know, we have the right people, the right amount of people in the right positions. I haven't seen anything that would say otherwise that we're taking away from FORSCOM and adding to INSCOM.
And I'll tell you, I've had a couple of conversations with your predecessor about grade plates and things like that, and they come to me because, you know, during the CT fight, everybody wanted a senior person, and for there was a period of years where they got senior people, and those TDAs, they were built with senior people, you know. And as they come to me or they come to, you know, Sergeant Major Guerra, and they say, hey, you know, we need to balance this out a little bit and turn that pyramid, you know, the right direction now. You know, put the point up instead of down. I'm all for that. And when people call me and say, hey, you know, Sergeant Major, are we going to downgrade these? Yeah, we're going to downgrade those positions because we're out of balance. And when we're out of balance, it affects the force in the future.
Well, and it doesn't just affect the force in the future. It affects upward mobility.
100%. That's what I'm talking about.
It affects promotion rates. If you have an entire structure or organization that is made of staff sergeants and above, there's nowhere for people to go. And you have to have those entry level positions back, you know, like we'll just keep foot stomping CI, but that's why there is a 10 level CI, you know, force structure that was brought back.
And it gives you the opportunity to build that trade craft over time so that when they are a staff sergeant or a sergeant first class, they actually have done everything below that versus the in-service recruiting of E5, E6. And then we put them into a job that we expected a seasoned counterintelligence agent at the sergeant first class level to be able to do. And quite frankly, that was their first or second job.
Right. And yeah, so, and I would say too, you know, I was a Corps G2 up at First Corps. And so I'm a little personally offended by somebody that thinks that the only thing that soldiers in FORSCOM are doing is working at JPass and security. So I would, you know, first of all, we have a responsibility in the Army Intel and Security Enterprise to do security. So sometimes that means you're going to check J-Pass. Why? Because those people that are trying to get into this, our secure facilities, probably shouldn't have access. And it's important that someone is checking that. And also, I would say, you know, like, we're not going to take from Forescom. There is a need for tactical intelligence. There is a need for soldiers inside of Forescom formations to be doing multi-domain operations and to be doing intelligence that supports the maneuver units and represents the intel warfighting function well. And so it's imperative that we have intel professionals that are doing tactical missions and not just strategic missions. There are ways that you can do all of the things, and I'll talk more about kind of the institutional side of it in a bit, but to think that all you're going to do at Forescom is go to the motor pool and paint rocks and check J-Pass and do security is ridiculous. And I get into this fight inside of the Pentagon all the time when I have senior civilians telling me, well, a 35 Tango at Fort Hood, for example, is at the motor pool. And I said, of course he or she is at the motor pool. Everyone is at the motor pool in Forescom on Mondays. You know, and what is that maintainer just not supposed to maintain the vehicle? They're only maintaining systems, intel systems? Like, no, of course. That's part of their weapon system. It's part of what makes them deployable, ready, and is doing the mission inside of that formation. So this narrative that that is all that Forescom soldiers, particularly intel soldiers in Forescom, are doing, I will stomp that out anywhere I go.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. And I'll tell you, it is imperative that our soldiers, as they're growing up in the Army, that they get experience at all echelons, you know, and whether it's strategic, operational, or tactical, you know, to round them out and make them a better NCO as they grow. But, you know, when I hear questions that say, you know, hey, am I just going to work in the S2 and do J-Pass all day? Well, I look at it through that lens, but also I look at it through another lens. That to me, that's poor leadership. That service member that asked me that question, I'm going to go find out who his leadership is. And I'm going to go find that NCO, and I'm going to say, hey, what are you doing with your soldier to train and broaden them on something just outside of, which we don't use J-Pass anymore. It's DIS now, which that's another day's discussion.
100%.
Because it really is a DIS. I mean, we got to fix that. So, but I'll tell you, you know, security is NCOM's middle name. And I'll tell you what, my G2, a guy named Paul Seitz, DA civilian, professionals. I mean, they actually, there's a whole lot more to it than I actually realized. And I'm probably the only enlisted DOD-trained adjudicator in the Army right now. But ISOC, continuous evaluation, there's so much more that goes into security that those soldiers that are working in the S2 shops that they could tap into and learn a broader sense. And if you look across the Army offices, whether it's the Army GON office, the Army OSIN office, you know, the Army Cryptologic office, you know, the Army Security office is a new office that was stood up just in the past 8 or 9 months. And it is that global enterprise approach to security in the Army, because it's probably the only area in the Army that is really still discombobulated and disconnected. But So I look back at those leaders and I, you know, what are you doing? There's more to it than what you're making that soldier do, and you're just grinding them out on that one thing when they could be doing so much more.
Right. All right, NCOs out there, if you're in Forescom and you are only think that you're relegated to sitting in an office and doing security management, you need to look at why you're there, what's your purpose, and get engaged, right? Engage your leadership, engage your followers, engage and understand your mission. You probably have a medal that has more tasks than just security management. Get in there and get after it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay.
And then no matter what the Army asks you to do, just be the best at it.
Do it well. Yeah, absolutely.
Be the best at it.
Stop
absolutely.
Complaining. Do it well. Be the best security manager ever.
Absolutely.
Be proud of it. It's important.
It is. It absolutely is.
All right, Sergeant Major Hobbs, we're going to go to you and ask this one from the field. Are there any efforts being discussed or considered that would cross-certify MOS skills as it relates to potential ASIs or SQIs that certain MOSs may be eligible for and others may not?
Thank you for that question. So MI-specific ASIs are tailored to enhance that specific MOS's ability to provide an additional capability to the unit. and that specified position. So normally, you know, a 35 November will go to an ASI producing course for a 35 November. Now, there are exceptions to that rule, but those should not be the norm. You know, soldiers need to strive to exceed the standard in their current position and assignments and continue to develop their respective occupational knowledge and skills within their respective career path.
Yeah, I think that the only other thing that I would add to that is that to really highlight exception, not the rule. If you're a 35 Fox, you need to be a really good intel analyst. If you're a 35 Mike, you need to be a really good humaner that can do interrogations. And if you're looking just to get schools and badges as a cross-functional kind of area, you probably aren't the best, whatever fill in the blank that you are supposed to be, because you're busy chasing schools and ASIs versus the ones that are applicable to the job that you're doing.
Oh, that's a great point. You know, for my entire career, it's really just be the best at what the Army's asking you to do. First, you signed up and said, I want to do this. I want to be an all sorcery analyst. That's what I want to do. So be the best one at it. And if you don't like that and you want to try something, and there's ways to go to assessment selection. There's things you can do to reclass. There's things you can change it all up. But you know, the different courses, if stuff's out there and it's available and you have time and your leadership says you, hey, I'm going to send you to this, and go do it. That's great. But it shouldn't be your full-time job trying to, you know, chase a badge or an additional ASI producing course that you can't take because it's not your MOS. I mean, but I'm all about, you know, the continuous learning model and you know, experiential learning and being able to go out there and get something different just to try something else. I mean, I'm okay with that, but not to the point to where now I need to go get me another all source analyst because you're never there because you're always gone somewhere.
Or because you're trying to be a 35 Mike or November or whatever, fill in the blank. If that's your interest and you came reclass. In as a 35 Fox, yeah, and like talk to ACME. Yes. Look at the in and out calls, reclass to be whatever it is that you want to be, because clearly that is more where your passion and talent lies. And we're not trying to stomp out initiative. We're just saying that it is more beneficial to the Intel enterprise as a whole if you are good at what you do. And if you feel like you're good at what you do and you have stagnated or you need to learn more, then there are opportunities for you to go other places inside the CMF.
And maybe there is a time when you go out and you go to a course that doesn't earn credit on your SRB because your MOS is not affiliated in the
documents. I think all of us have done courses or
sure
training that was kind of outside our career field, but it was something that the unit needed at the time.
Absolutely. That doesn't mean you don't have the skills. You learned a skill if you went to that course. And
right. Got, field sanitation.
There you go.
1990-something.
That's
it
a
was
great
necessary
one.
In Korea.
It was necessary in Korea. Still is today.